in selling that company.
Whoever suggested that.
It may be a statement, along with Representative Booth's, I think his idealistic, dreamistic idea of saying to one man, you run the railroad, fine. However, I think we'd find it completely unconstitutional. So I don't think it's going to work.
That's what dreams are made of.
Right. Thank you very much, Ron. We appreciate it. Our next person to testify is Keith Campbell.
Good afternoon.
We should state your name for the record,
Keith Campbell. I'm Box 722 Seward. I'm the president of the Chamber of Commerce this year. Here's also a position paper that trails very closely the fact that it's a joint position paper with the city. I can see it's getting late and things are starting to degenerate. That's always my lot in life, late on the agenda. But
oh, not really. We're just getting going good, aren't we?
Well, we've got a long time if we need it. The sewer chamber basically likes House Bill 512, is in favor of the state acquiring the railroad. And the summary points on the second page of that paper will basically give you the reasons why. I'd like to reiterate that we want, as stated in 512, a viable, independent entity as near as is constitutional. We would, I think, point out on line, on page 2F, a little bit bothered by the word may. The railroad may be operated prudently and according to sound business management practices. We would much prefer, I think, the word will be, and hold people's feet to the fire, not just leave it to someone's discretion, or seven or eight someone's discretion of what the word may will be. And we would prefer, I think, a little stronger language in that particular. I think people understand the word will a lot better than they do my interpretation of what I may do if I want to. The bill is generally very well written. Have no particular gripe with five voting members of the board, but we did discuss and would recommend maybe a seven-man board to try to get a few more gray cells, hopefully good gray cells, in the management of this this railroad. That's a suggestion. I don't know if you want to go into these kinds of things or not.
Yes, very definitely.
If we have suggestions like that or not.
Very definitely we do.
The next things we were talking about would be, you've heard all afternoon the problems of Seward and the long history of and our involvement with the railroad. And here we are setting up in this bill a board of directors on page 6 that would, as I read it and the chamber reads it, allow transferring the corporation's entire interest in real property, et cetera, trade, and right on down the line without any other oversight as I see it. Now the legislature is going to give the power to these people to run, et cetera, but it looks like to us that maybe this particular clause ought to be subject to ratification of the legislature should they decide, we decide to debate and sell the railroad at some point down the time, that maybe the public again ought to have, through the legislative process, an oversight thing on this. I may have missed something in the reading of this bill, and several of us may have, but that's just a comment.
If I could respond to that, no, you haven't missed anything. I did, though. This bill was constructed as sort of a merger between two drafts that were put together by senators and representatives early this session, and a second part of that statement was left out, so that what they were really trying to get at is that in the case that there was a lien or that a mortgage was put on rail property for borrowing, that the corporation's interest in the real property could be cleared, or that when the lien was satisfied, it wasn't necessarily for the purpose of transferring or selling off rail property, because under the Federal Act, any rail property that's sold within a period of 10 years, the proceeds revert to the United States government, and there's no incentive for the state or corporation to sell rail property at this point.
That just read that way to me, and I have
you're correct, though.
We are concerned, of course, that alluding to Mr. Werner's and to the mayor's comments, city manager's comments that the railroad be as viable as possible, as good prudence as common sense can make it, as prudently as any businessman would try to be, within the constraints of the law. And this may mean that in due time it's advantageous for the out-and-out acquisition by the railroad of the hydrotrain process in toto, or seaways, something, or some concept like this. We would prefer that this concept not be shut off in this kind of legislation, that at least if it be permissive, should good common sense and business practice dominate, or indicate down the road that this diversification, if you would, could accrue to the consumer of the state of Alaska. And some language that would allow acquisitions or diversification into other modes of quote, a total transportation system. After all, that's what we're talking about here, we feel. It should be the focal point of legislation such as this. I don't, other than using the words acquire and diversification in these kinds of contexts, I wouldn't suggest any language, but we would prefer something, at least permissive language, such as this in the bill. The governance clauses, the operation clauses are very clear, I think, and very consistent, and allow no particular argument there. We feel very, very solidly that the right of eminent domain for acquisition in future years is a very viable part of this bill, and we commend you for that. And I know that's a debatable point because of its semi-autonomous public utility type thing, but I think it's valid here and it needs to remain. I can't emphasize too strongly and re-emphasize what all of the preceding speakers have indicated to you, that the city of Seward is vitally interested in this railroad and its acquisition and its management. We certainly would like, as this bill or legislation wins through the legislature, the opportunities to testify from to keep abreast of what is certainly the future of this town, because it would not, could not, and will not exist if it isn't a transportation hub for the state of Alaska. And the future is here, and we're willing, as a Chamber of Commerce and a community, to work with y'all for the good of the state of Alaska and its people.
Representative Booth.
Thank you, Keith. You know, here's another thing that gives me heartburn, and I'm sure it's giving the committee heartburn. We still have to resolve it. I think we brought that up at the last committee hearing. We keep saying that we want legislative oversight, which is good. So many things mixed up with the government, and yet on page 3, on line 7 and 8, corporation has a legal existence independent of and separate from the state. Now, it just appears to me that we can't have our cake and eat it too. Now, we're going to have a combination of them. In any case, we're going to have political ramifications. Or we're going to have to go into the government end of it and another bureaucracy gets set up, and you know what that means. Or we're going in, which is an impossible situation at the moment, private industry. We have yet to solve this particular problem. And this bill is written around that contradictive statement in there, is it not? I would, if I may, through the chair, question Mr. Sinkson on that and have him kind of explain a little bit where we're going. And I got a month with him tonight.
Heavy sigh. Okay,
it's important to bring this out.
Sure. These are some legal buzzwords. Legal existence independent of and separate from the state. In the terms of the context, the way it's written here, it means that the corporation is legally responsible for its actions. It's legally responsible for the operation of the railroad. It's not that it's the state is here and the corporation is over here. It's that the corporation is underneath the state, but it is responsible for its actions and the actions of the railroad. But you're right, how that actually works and fits in. This is only part of the full sentence. Okay. But that's what those buzzwords refer to.
Yeah. Well, I think, having read the Constitution a time or two, state constitution, I know you people are up against some tough words here, and I appreciate the job that you're going to have to do in this this fashion, but it still, I think history will tell us that these corporations tend to run fine for a period of time until something tends to go wrong, like the power authority, someone mentioned a while ago, and then it tends to get jerked back into line, and this is, I guess, is what legislative oversight is for, and that's safety valves, or else somebody would march on down a side road, and the public would not be well served ultimately. And I'm no brighter than anybody else can tell you how that particular language can be rectified.
Yeah,
I follow your thought. Yeah.
You've seen that happen in Ada. You've seen
sure,
it happen
sure.
in Alaska Housing Finance. You've seen it happen in many others. Just not to give you any idea that it would not happen here. And
I don't suffer that.
Incumbent upon us to try to stop some of that type of situation.
Madam Chairman.
President McBride.
Thank you. I like your idea in one sense of the railroad being a transportation system. And probably a lot of railroads in the country would still be operating if they had started out with the concept of being a transportation system instead of a railroad and narrowly set their goals and were regulated well by government and a whole lot of other things. But on the other hand, when we try to put together that should be prudently operated, and some people say make a profit, and others say at least break even, and think of it again being state-owned and government owned by all of the people of the state, then we start thinking about it being a transportation system, then I think maybe we might get into a lot of troubles. For example, we could also operate a truck line then, and we would be competing with private operators. From a good share of the state don't think so much about barge lines because usually they're from the lower 48 and we're not quite so touchy about those things, but some other modes of transportation we would get pretty touchy about.
Sure. Well, I'll give you the standard Chamber of Commerce reiteration, I guess, to that. I really don't care whether this, as a taxpayer and a state Alaska resident, whether we do get into the truck line or not, if we can do it better and my freight bill goes down, because this community is hopping mad and lots of communities off the chain, because when the new shipper announced it was coming to Seward over the holidays, Sealand and Tote raised their rates 8% to 15%, knowing full well we were going to have the prescribed rate war in the spring. They got fat on all of us, on our bread and potatoes this year. And I could care less whether we went head-to-head with them with a public entity or quasi-public entity, if it means over the long run that the consumer is well served. And I can come down philosophically either side if I was over here driving a truck. But at representing the business community of this community, I'll come down at this point very hard that way, because we weren't well served. But the boardrooms of Tote and Sealand on the East Coast were damn well served. And I just take umbrage at that. And so I think that this may be, if we design it as well as we possibly can, may have a great impact on the lifestyle of this whole state, especially recognizing the things that we've been trying to do here locally to stimulate the foreign trade and buck up that total tonnage so that the thing will make money. I think over the long run, we may be able to afford some nice public services by even hauling people back and forth, for instance. I think that these kinds of things, although recognizing the pitfalls, but every challenge or every problem here stated as a potential challenge or as a problem here is a challenge for somebody and a good, bright body, board of directors here, management, to work on for the benefit of the state of Alaska. And that's the way I look at it, as a real opportunity to do something different, if we give the corporate structure the latitude to do that.
May I say one more thing?
Representative,
I think you're probably the best person to ask and the best person that would have to search your conscience, but the state will never belong, state, quote, will never belong to the Chamber of Commerce, but you may have people in the trucking business who do. Now, Does that bother you any to...
Oh, no, I'm at diametric odds to the State Chamber Board on this particular thing, but we belong to them. But I also know who's dominating that board of directors. It isn't the city of Seward. It's the people I was just shooting at. I mean, I'll be very blunt with you. It's those people.
That was a tough question. I appreciate
it. I'll answer it. Go ahead. Every time.
Go ask the City of Anchorage Chamber of Commerce about that.
Steve?
Just one other thing to mention, taking another step back. You mentioned that the rates went up 8 to 16% this year. When Alaska Navigation was thought to be entering the market, that year Toten Sealand rates raised 21%. And if you look at what happens with rates and competition and competitive marketplace, and try and go back over the ICC stuff and say that, well, everybody has individual rates, individual costs, and that they're totally independent. But if you were to try an experiment and say you wanted to ship 100,000 pounds of lumber from Seattle to Anchorage and called both shippers, the rates would be very close. And I'm sure that if you look at the different types of ships and different types of operations, their costs that go into that are quite a bit different. But I don't know, that's just sort of a staff comment, I guess. Anyway, also on the to say one other thing that I thought of, getting back to Representative Abood's question, excuse me, the policy decision was made in this legislation that there were two alternatives. You put it in DOT, it's a line agency of the state and under the administration, or you say that it has legal existence separate from the state. And the first reaction was, we don't want it in DOT, we need something else. Is this viable, and is it the easy method or the preferred method? That's a policy cut, but the reason that this language is in there is attempting to go at the other alternative than keeping it in a straight line agency. So if that helps anymore.
Anything to keep it out of DOT.
Okay.
Are there any other questions, Mr. Brown? I think probably we ought to take a little break. I didn't even realize things have been going so neatly. I didn't realize we've been sitting here almost 2.5 hours. Bev?
Yeah, I just wanted to make a remark. Sealand is owned by R.J. Reynolds Company, which also owns a cosmetic firm, and God knows what the heck else they own. They're a huge, huge, huge conglomerate that hires Alaska people, true, but I don't think they give a damn about how much it costs to get anything to Alaska or what the Alaska consumer gets, and I don't think Tote does. It belongs to Sun Oil, and I don't know who it belongs to now. Linden belongs to somebody on the West Coast. Our shipping has always been controlled by Seattle. Our fisheries industry has been controlled by Seattle. Now it's controlled by Japan to a large degree. We don't have hardly any control over our own destiny. But the railroad would be ours. And even if it were in competition with those foreign companies, by God, maybe it would do us some favors. And I think maybe we should look at it from that standpoint.
Thank you, Beth. Well said.
Glad we got that one out.
Why don't we take a break for about 15 minutes and come back in about 5 minutes after 4?
Hey, Booyer, we're not going to hear from you.
Sergeant at Arms.
Where's the whip?
Would you grab that representative with you and drag him in here?
Which one?
The one that just got away from you.
A mouth.
I don't know where he went, but he was walking with you. Grab him, Willard.
I hear him.
No, I'm damn glad I came.
We're 6 minutes over what I said we would be, but everybody was getting acquainted, and I didn't feel that I wanted to interrupt that. At this time, we're out of testifiers. However, is there anyone who signed up as a witness who would now like to testify?
Yeah.
All right.
I was hoping most everyone would leave.
Connor Ben-Cardino?
And that my husband would go back to work.
Whole truth, not but truth.
Would you give your name?
Connie Ben-Cardino. And my stance is probably not going to be a very popular one. First, I would like to say that I do believe the state needs to acquire the railroad. My first horror is that we will get something like the ferry system going again. If I knew that we were going to have another ferry system with the deficits that we have with the ferry system,
$30 million bucks,
I would vote against acquiring the railroad. even though I know we need it desperately and that probably the salvation of Seward depends on that railroad, there's got to be a better way than subsidizing to the hilt everything that comes along. In a free enterprise system like we have that I really appreciate, everybody can't have everything. If that railroad is acquired by the state, and I don't know how to do it, I have no idea what the mechanics would need to be behind it, but if it's acquired by the state and we get enough competition, and by that I mean, and I have a friend in the audience that is with the trucking industry, and I will say it now, I think the trucking industry needs competition. I think they need to take a look at the salaries that their men earn, at the benefits they get. I think if we're going to acquire that railroad and we're going to wind up eating all the federal employees that have already gotten everything but the world, we don't need it. We need some system that we can erase all those mistakes that were made in the past and start with a new slate. And I also mean that if we're going to acquire that railroad and we're going to put it in a state system with state salaries, that we also need to take a look at that. They are not competitive with private industry. The clerk salaries are higher. Everything is higher if it's under the state. We cannot make the railroad pay for itself. I believe that there is a way somewhere with someone more learned than I that can figure these things out, that we can haul enough freight, we can advertise enough, we can promote the railroad, we can do all the things that a business could do and would do that would make the railroad pay for itself. And when it starts to show a profit because it is a state entity, whatever, then we can subsidize all the traffic you want where human beings are concerned. They decide to put a railroad into Nome, fine. Nome doesn't want it. Why give it to them if they don't want it? Why encumber all the people with things that only a few want? There's always going to be the few that suffer in our system. There's never going to be, in my opinion, that utopia that everyone keeps looking for. Without the railroad, I don't believe Seward has much of a chance, and I really hope that we get it, that the state buys it, but that the committees that work on it, that you people that have put so much time into it and will continue to do so, will truly try to find something new. It doesn't necessarily mean that because it's been in existence forever and this is the way it's been done in the past, is always the right way or the best way. We could look for innovative things, and I don't know what, but I'd be glad to brainstorm with someone. But I agree with Mr. Warner, and I agree with our mayor, that as a taxpayer, I get really upset at tax time when I hear the deficits that we've got and all these things, and why, just because we have a lot of oil money, do we feel we've got to subsidize everything? Why can't we make it pay? What in the world is wrong with that? You know, if I'm helping to pay for the railroad somewhere along the way, or if it's part mine, why can't we make a profit with it and turn it back to the peoples that need it? I don't care what we do with the profit. But what I'm saying is that I don't want to see it subsidized like the ferry system, no. I want to see it paid, or at least break even. You know, if it means increasing tariffs, whatever it means at the time that it takes place, we have to do it. But we do need it. So I'm going to throw it right back at you and say we definitely need that railroad, but for my money, I hope that you can figure a way to make it at least break even.
May I respond? This is Ben Gardino. I'm Milo Fritz. And you might wonder what an aged doctor is interested in acquisition of a railroad in Alaska is.
Yes.
Well, it dawned on me this summer that somebody better go and find out about how a railroad is run and at a profit and inside a state. That's how I ended up on the Florida East Coast Railroad property for a couple of days, where I learned a great deal. And the men in that railroad and the men who were running Conrail, or are running Conrail, that's the consolidation of the railroads in the northeastern part of the country, and the man who's just past president of Southern Railway, which also runs at a profit, put their finger on the very thing that you're talking about. We've got to run the thing with, as somebody just said, the least economic drain, and not subsidize it if at all possible, or if we do have to subsidize it, at the least amount available possible. And their universal complaint with the present system is that they would not, that we must consummate agreements with the unions that will be operating the railroad after the two-year moratorium,
right,
before we buy the railroad. Otherwise, they got us under the gun.
Right.
Seward will starve to death. Anchorage won't have this, Fairbanks won't have that, while we're negotiating with the unions. And the unions know they can win.
Right.
The Florida East Coast made perfectly, I don't want you to think Florida East Coast or I'm anti-union or anything of that kind. The union, average person in the union doesn't want to be paid for 12 hours work when he does only 4 hours work. I mean, they're just decent people like anybody else. So what the Florida East Coast did and the other railroads, Conrail and Southern, was make pacts with the union so that they got paid for what they did but didn't get paid for what they didn't do.
Right.
And in that way, when the fluctuations of the economy occurred, why the overhead of the railroad, which is 50% in the States and 60% up here, was lessened. So I'm very glad to hear somebody take the other side of this a little bit, as I've been interested in. That's why I'm here.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, and I'd also like to ask one more question, and I don't know if this is appropriate or not, but I have also wondered how effective a part-time board of directors is. In my limited experience, anytime you have to depend on a volunteer or someone taking off from their day's work to go do something else for the good of all, you don't really get anything but part-time work.
You get what you pay for.
You get exactly what you pay for. And I'm not so sure that we shouldn't have a full-time board of directors. I don't know if that's appropriate or not, but in my way of thinking, you're going to get somebody working full-time then, and their full-time business is going to be the good of the railroad, the good of the state, the good of the people, making a profit so we don't have to subsidize it, so that we can say, we have something to be proud of. We can have a first. We don't have to. I feel that Alaska's in a good spot in many ways because, you know, we're still a young state. And we've seen a lot of mistakes made by the Lower 48 with railroads, with all kinds of things. And we're in a position now to avoid some of those things because Alaska is still the last frontier and it's coming alive. It's been slowly growing, but it is coming alive. And in order to avoid those kinds of things and to have something we can really be proud of, why can't we look at the mistakes the rest have made and try to find another way? And that's not to say that it won't be a mistake either, but at least we won't be following the same vein that, you know, there's got to be a way. I'm not sure how, but I don't think or feel that a part-time board of directors is going to be your answer. I also believe that if you're going to have a state entity, a business that's going to pay for itself, whether it makes no money or not, but at least pays for itself, and you hire a Frank Jones or someone similar. I think Mr. Jones has done an excellent job. Could be a lot more done, but I think he's done a fantastic job. Why not give that man enough room to make money? Why hamstringing with, you know, there's got to be checks and balances, and I do not know what happens in government. I'm not very learned on the mechanisms involved and all that, but there's got to be some checks and balances. We all know that. But why not give that man room? Why not let him make money? We can find places to put it. There's all kinds of handicap money needed. There's all kinds of food stamp money needed. There's all kinds of things we could spend our money on. But let the Dublin Railroad make a profit. It can if we do something now and stop saying, God forgive me, yes, I want it even though it's subsidized.
Don't hamstring it.
Right, don't hamstring it. Give it some operating room, and for my money, I don't want it if we got to subsidize it to the hilt, because our ferry system, I think, is a disgrace. There's got to be something we can do to not have $30 million every year in the red. You know, where's it going to keep coming from? What happens when the gas and oil runs out? For my opinion, if it's worth anything, there are others that believe like me, they just pay for it through the nose forever if we can't start with a better system. Thank you.
Thank you,
Madam Chairman.
Yes.
I'd like to say that I did not pay this lady for what she said. I don't think I've ever had the pleasure of meeting her before. But her concerns are exactly mine. I realize how essential that railroad is for the state, from Fairbanks to Seward, and by ripple effect all over the state. I merely say that we should take advantage of what's already been discovered
right, by
the profit-making railroads on the East Coast, that you have got to control the greatest cause of economic loss in railroads, which is namely the cost of labor.
Right.
Not by grinding the fingers of the poor into the dirt, mm-hmm. but by making fair and equitable agreements before we get under the gun like the ferry system is.
Right.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Representative McBrayer is next.
First of all, I'd like to defend the ferry system a little bit.
Of course,
part of our highway down in,
yes,
in our part of the state, and I noticed that driving down here from Anchorage that I think I drove over a road that is 100% subsidized, not
right.
50%
right.
subsidized.
I agree.
And I noticed that there were some snow plows out there working, which I suspect are being run by state employees. So.
Right.
Now, I think we have to keep some of these things in balance. Now, I'm not saying at all that the ferry system can't be run more efficiently, it can't be run better, it can't be serve the people that it serves better. None of those things am I saying,
mm-hmm.
because I think most all of us and all our communities in the Southeast, but, you know, I think also that when we talk about $30 million to subsidize the ferry, we got to remember, too, that all of the roads in our state are subsidized,
mm-hmm.
and that road, that is our road in,
mm-hmm.
in the Southeast, and as I understand, the Tustamina comes in here, and so
mm-hmm.
it serves people from here, too.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Limited numbers.
Yeah. The second thing I'd like to say is the full-time board, and that I think is a good concept, but on the other hand, keeping a full-time board together in one place sort of means a professional board, sort of means that it's really insulated itself from the people, and it'd sort of be like saying putting together a full-time hired board of directors to run your city, and we wouldn't be happy with that, I'm sure. And again, because it belongs to all of the people of this community, you like to hire representatives, or elect in this case representatives of the community, to tell the city manager what he'd better be doing. You hire him because he's an expert in administration,
mm-hmm.
but you wouldn't want a board that was a full-time board to be telling him what to do. I think we all like the idea of representatives. You may like one and dislike another one, but
mm-hmm.
he has to come back for re-election at another time, so I just wanted to make those couple of comments.
But a good city manager, as we have, knowing his business, also knows how to get the majority of the people to agree. And that's where you need, yes, that's where you need the expertise to be able to convince, to back up, to show facts. Not to do it just because it's mandated somewhere through government that it has to be done that way. If it's going to be a business, it's got to be a business. And I agree, you know, and I knew that it was going to be an unpopular stance because of where you're from.
No, it's not unpopular.
But what this gentleman has said is my concern. If we take over that railroad with already the union, the problems that we've got, we're going to be in a worse position than we are with the ferry. And I'm not saying the ferry's not efficient, or that it isn't needed in the areas, but it's a shame that we're under that kind of a gun. And if we can avoid that with the railroad, that's my concern.
I think you're exactly right.
Sure. Representative Szymanski was next.
Who's chairing this meeting? The 2 points that you made, particularly related to the break-even, the railroad and so forth. I'd even propose a termination clause in the acquisition of it based on that, if I thought it would survive or if it was even practical to assume it once we got into it. But I think the decision, once we make it to go for it, right, wrong, or indifferent, we're going to be with it for a long time into the future, even if it does become a real drain on the state.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about political pressure then. I mean, it's real tough to back out after you first got into it. I'd make some analogies of them, but I'm kind of thinking a couple. Maybe I'd be nice about it. But the full-time board, I think that's an exciting idea because in countering the point here is that I think that policymakers in running a railroad, people that we need to look at putting policy together for marketing or dealing with the tariff, for interlining, for design, construction, whatever. We need a little bit of, I mean, that's what a board, from my perspective, does. They're policymakers in areas, and if they're just part-time policymakers, they're not going to be able to give, I think, the direction that's needed sometimes to the people that have to go out there and implement it. So I don't know, I think that's an exciting idea, but need to reflect on a little more to determine whether or not it's possible. is I think you can have still, I think you can meet both ends of it possibly by having those people appointed the way they're being appointed, selecting expertise there, people that on that board who are have got expertise in marketing or in legal or whatever,
business.
Or business. And so I don't dismiss it out of hand any too quick, but I'm thinking about a termination clause. That'd be interesting, but I don't know if it'd ever work. You can see the termination date come up when we didn't make a profit. Wouldn't happen. Nobody
can
terminate.
I would against some subsidy.
Representative Booth.
About three things. One, there are people like you, and there's a couple of them sitting right here. Secondly, just because, and I mentioned it in passing a few minutes ago, I don't think anybody heard me. When we're talking about Steve, if you recall, we're going down the line of appointing a board, governor approval, blah, blah, blah. That's what we've been doing for years and years and years. But just because our fathers did something, it was in the sugar business or any other business, doesn't mean we have to meet them. I'm wondering if we have not, in fact, expanded our thinking to the fact, to the area of brainstorming. Like, as an example, you got a two-story building and you got 100,000 pickles to put upstairs. Do you go to Korea and hire 100,000 people to carry one pickle at a time? Or 50,000 for two? You know, that's what I'm getting at. I don't think we're really thinking ahead of us enough to say there is an alternative. I don't think we're saying there is one. I'm saying we've got to look at that more carefully. Thirdly, I would react to this part-time deal, part-time board. I like the idea, the more I think about it, a full-time board. And the reason I say that is because a full-time board, in my opinion, or a part-time board, let me take it that direction first, only reacts to crises. Mm-hmm. They react to a crisis. That's why they're part-time. Anytime they come together, they got a crisis. Whereas a full-time board would react to day by day, week by week, staying on top of it, and therefore probably, and in most cases, eliminate a tremendous amount of crises, if you will. And secondly, they keep telling us that us legislators are part-time. I beg to differ with you. We are not part-time by any stretch of the imagination, but there are an awful lot of people want us part-time, and I don't think you people would. I don't think you people would put up that 5 minutes really if we really came to the vote. And I'm not going to talk about the pay range or nothing.
Any further questions, Representative Massey?
I can say I just figured out a way to tie the two together: the part about profit and the full-time board. And that is, we'll tie the board salary to profit.
Well, to some incentive wouldn't be a bad idea.
Yes, well, Mr. Chairman,
you know,
just one other thing. Name me one governmental agency that's ever made money.
They don't.
You never
That's
will.
What scares me.
But you've got to
There's
put
no
it
reason
on
for
a basis.
It not to, though.
You've got to put it on a
Tied
basis.
To profit.
Y'all done, Mr. Mansky? You finished? Oh.
No, I just... Oh. Interacting over
you've
here.
You've got to put it out of good
public
business acumen.
Right.
Like I'm running a business. The trouble with government is it never looks down the lower right-hand corner. They never see the lower right-hand corner. In fact, they don't even care if there's a lower right-hand corner or not.
Well,
and I think that's the problem with government today.
They look at an equitable way to distribute everything to everyone. And I understand their problem, you know, and it is a very major problem. But we shouldn't have to keep supporting things that should be able to be on a paying basis, and I do believe that you gentlemen will figure that out one way or the other before you really make a decision that you're going to have to live with, and we all are going to have to live with for a very long time with repairs. And I'd like to comment on, I don't remember who it was that testified on it, with the trains going to the prison and being repaired and so forth. We constantly are expounding how much we need to rehabilitate people when they're going to prison. And again, we hamstring that. You know, you talk to those that have been in Juno and they get the same AAs over and over again. You talk to ones that have been in jail in Eagle River and they stay the same courses over and over again. Bored is all get out. Why can't we have, with this fine facility we have here, why can't we have the training programs that they need? And why do we have to pay a private entity to come in and repair the trains when we've got all that expertise that we could have trained very well to do the trains and offset some of the costs of a state-run business? Why does it always have to be subbed out to someone else? If you own it and you've got the expertise available to do it, why do you have to sub it out? You know, it just doesn't compute to me that we can't
Madam Chairman, just one
I think that Jack McBride had a question ahead of you, Mitch.
I had a few last time.
You
got to fight for every word you get out of this.
Yes, sir.
The only problem with that is, and there is some people have said it, that by doing something of that nature, it will compete with private industry, and they don't want that to happen either. So there's an argument to the other side.
Okay, not Jack, did you have a question?
I agree.
I think that's an innovative idea, whoever brought it up. And you got a perfect community here. We're at the Seward Skill Center with a lot of skills in how to teach people in vocational things. So I think that's a real good idea. I just wanted to go back one more time to the board, if I might. And a board is really a policy setter, and they set the policy, and then the administration, or in this case Frank Jones, who everybody—I don't know—but everybody seems to think has done an excellent job. It's his job to implement that policy and do that. So, if the policy of the board is to make a profit, break even, only spend $20 million in 1 year, whatever it might be, that's the administration's job to see that that gets done. And so that's why I would argue against a full-time board, who is then part of the administration. That's the only reason to have a full-time board, is to make them part of the administration. And then you got, in this case, seven people plus the administrator all arguing and fighting, and none of them know what their job is. You have to set out that the board is the policymaker, and they're the ones who set the direction, and then the administrator's job is to make sure that that's implemented.
All right. Are there any further questions?
Yes, I asked.
Dr. Fritz, yes, you did.
I wanted to say two things. First, that contrary to what impression I might have given my fellow townsmen from Ketchikan, I'm not against the ferry system. Mm-hmm. I just felt that if we had been able to look ahead down the line and what the troubles were, we could have negotiated the contracts before the first ship ever came to Ketchikan.
That's right. So, I agree with that.
So what I want to do is avoid that same thing with the railroad.
That's my position.
The second thing is, about full-time versus part-time, this is the only way we diverge. The legislature is a perfect example of what would happen if you had a full-time board. Let's say we were full-time legislators, we're not subject to re-election. We'd be way off in left field on any issue that you care to mention. But we have people who watch what we do all the time, and if we're getting off into left field, we soon hear through public opinion messages, telephone calls, conversation, and let us say, hey, you guys are doing the wrong thing. We want you to get back here in the middle of the track and do what we want. Mm-hmm. So I feel a full-time board would be a mistake.
I can see your point. Please don't take offense at what I'm going to say, I don't think government is anything other than the vocal minority. It's rare that you get the majority that speak out. It's the same way with prisons, with prisoners, with everything. It's the vocal minority that controls. And if I am a special interest and you are going against what I want, you dad blame well believe I'm going to be on the phone. But that doesn't mean I'm the majority. And, you know, I don't know what the answer is to that. I don't know if there is an answer. All I know is that I can agree with that, except when you have a business, a corporation, you have a board of directors, they've got to stay on the ball. They've got to be there. They've got to make those decisions. They've got to decide what you're going to do, and you're held to do that, you know, if you are then the administration or part of the administration or whatever. And then if Mr. Jones is given, or whomever it might be, is given the leeway to really run it as a business, I don't have a problem with it, you know. And I don't have a problem if a part-time board can do that. Maybe I don't understand what a board is supposed to do, a board of directors is supposed to do. That's a good possibility. But if you're talking about having someone with expertise in running a railroad and one with the expertise on how to make it stay on the tracks and one to do marketing and one to do this and that, then maybe I'm talking about administration, not a board of directors. And if so, I can agree with you because I believe that there should not be... I don't believe it should be just Joe Blow from Seward because he's interested in the railroad being here. If he doesn't have some field of expertise, either in marketing, in advertising, in business, in promote in something. Why is he there? It should not be figurehead positions. It should definitely be, and that's why I'm afraid for the governor to appoint. You know, if I've donated enough to the governor, maybe I'm going to get appointed, and I sure as hell wouldn't know what I'm doing. and I don't think that it's going to succeed if it has to be another. And I like Mr. Sheffield, don't get me wrong, he's a friend of ours. But what I'm saying is that any governor, anybody, when you get in a political ballgame like that, it's going to become another non-paying entity of the state of Alaska that we would be ashamed of. You know, because we've got examples we can go back to that have already happened. We do not have to make the same mistakes just because our fathers did it or our grandfathers or whatever. There's got to be a different way. If it means changing the law or changing the way things run, then maybe this group should be aggressive enough to do so, to not be afraid of not being reelected or being popular in your city or being whatever. If our true interest is the state of Alaska and what happens with it down the line and our renewable resources, you know, we have to do something to make it pay. We might run out of gas and oil and, you know, whatever. We need to make it pay in some way, and I hope that it can be done.
Steve?
If I could say something, I've been trying to figure out, my job is technical things, okay, get in and find out the sand burrs and the other things and report back. And I don't want to get cross purposes or anything like that with the way the discussion has gone, but I'm having a trouble understanding how the employee issue all fits in within the context of the federal legislation. Now maybe it would be possible for the state to get some change in that, but the federal act is pretty specific on what happens with employees, and if I could just read some sections here and maybe throw that out to discussion. Section 604 of the Transfer Act says that subject to the provisions of this title, the United States, through the Secretary of Transportation, shall transfer all rail property of the Alaska Railroad to the state. Such transfer shall occur as soon as practicable after the Secretary has made the certifications required in subsection D of this section and shall be accomplished in the manner specified in subsection B of this section. I'll pick out just the specific section dealing with employees, which is 3A, and it says, prior to the date of transfer, the Secretary shall certify that the state-owned railroad has established arrangements pursuant to Section 607 of this title, which is the transfer authorization, to protect the employment interest of employees of the Alaska Railroad during the two-year period commencing on the date of transfer. The state-owned railroad shall adopt all collective bargaining agreements that are in effect on the date of transfer. Such agreements shall continue in effect for the two-year period commencing on the date of transfer unless the parties agree to the contrary before the expiration of that two-year period. Such agreements shall be renegotiated during the two-year period unless the parties agree to the contrary. Okay, so
plenty of room for negotiations in there.
After transfer.
Unless the parties agree, it says, somewhere
right.
in there.
Right. But that would mean that but the employees are already protected under this act for a two-year period.
Okay.
What incentive do they have to agree to go in and renegotiate their contract?
Life expectancy
know.
After 2 years
that's
really
right.
quick.
Job security would be one good reason.
You tell them kiss off.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, that's my point. You know, are we inheriting all the benefits they're getting? Are we inheriting having to pay all the retirements that they're getting?
And the inefficiencies.
Shall we go
that
through
that
the chair, please? It's getting out of hand. Representative Smasky, did you have a question?
Well, I think Steve is hitting on a point which I think we need to discuss more as a committee, but I think Representative Kuritz has had some time to research it as well, that we need to look very closely at it, and my response is just that there's a big incentive. I mean, if they know their life expectancy dries up in 2 years, and during that two-year period, you think they're not going to bargain in good faith?
Right.
I mean, you got a guy holding your gun to your head, and you can believe. And what they're going to try to do, obviously, is better their position in the legislation.
Okay.
That's their best interest, is try to better their position in the legislation. Extending it 15 years down the road. I'd do it if I was them, if I was on the other side. I mean, I'd negotiate enough labor deal.
Sure.
Representative McBride.
But, you know, we might be saying something here that I'm not sure how we're going to accomplish it. And we say it on page 25, where we say employees of the Alaska Railroad are employees of the corporation and not of the state. Now, I don't know that.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it sounds good. But are we going to, you know, in the context that Steve just told us, is it going to be that easily accomplished? to...
Sounds like it could be after the two-year period, or during that two-year moratorium, the negotiations could take place so that they would have an option, maybe a transfer outside where there's another federal railroad or whatever.
But also, if I might, didn't you also that, aren't there some things, didn't you say that there were some things that had to happen within that two-year period? It just didn't say that they wouldn't or would be a state employee or anything like that.
The context of who gets the railroad, everything in the bill refers to the state-owned railroad.
Right.
Now, if the state has a corporation or an authority to operate it, or if they lease out the operations or one thing or another, it's still a state-owned railroad. Okay. So the employees, and this is another one that we're going through trying to research all the ramifications of, but the employees are employees of the railroad first and the state-owned railroad second. So they're railroad employees. They come with the deal and with the two-year requirement that they are protected for that two-year period during which the contracts are renegotiated. At the end of the two-year period, if there is no settlement, the contract's end. There's one further provision in the bill here that says that any labor management negotiation impasse declared before the date of transfer shall be settled in accordance with a site here in the federal code, and that's binding arbitration. So if the state and the railroad employees enter into a negotiation and it's not going in the best interest of the state, and maybe the state's looking for some concessions or something, I don't know, just for an example, binding arbitration comes in and says, well, under the federal bill, you're basically protected, so we have to go with the way the employee contracts were. That definitely wouldn't go in the best interest of the state if, you know, that was the policy. But it also says any impasse declared after the date of transfer shall be subject to any applicable state law. Okay, we don't have any state law on the books at this time that deals with corporations or corporation employees or employees of a state-owned railroad. So any impasse declared after transfer is open.
One more thing, I'd just like to clear this up. Do you see that as meaning then that any impasse, we do have laws applicable to state employees, so then do you see that as an impasse that we might be stuck with that kind of a thing?
Not sure exactly how to answer that, but what I see is that any way you shake out what might happen under this situation, the state may be better off to wait until after transfer to negotiate
right. With
the contracts, by the way this is written. Now, that I could be corrected on that. But.
Until we get a clarification, I think probably we ought to leave that point alone. I read it one way, other people read it a different way, and so I think probably we'll ask Steve to clarify that for us according to the Federal Railroad Act, and then we'll be able to take it up from there. Otherwise, we're just going around in circles, which it's not doing us any good at all. Did you have another question, Mrs. Ben-Curdy?
I just want to make a quick comment that I want to thank you very much for coming forward, because you should be committed for bringing forth your position, because I think you are representative of many people that feel very similar. I've heard it before, that we should not just blindly run ahead with it, and even if it means being very painful about making a decision not to acquire the railroad, we should always leave that option open to us. I've often thought sometimes that I was surrounded by a lot of liberal people in my legislative body down there that have been tough to bring out their true conservative feelings, but I'm happy to see some of that coming out here on the committee today.
Thank you much, Connie. Our next witness is...
I always reach out to the left
Willard
and find
Dunham.
A bunch of people.
My name is Willard Dunham, and I'm resident. My address is Box 37, Seward. I've lived in Seward for 41 years, and I'd like to thank you, Madam Chairman, and Commission for having an opportunity to speak for you. My first job in Alaska was on the Alaska Railroad in 1946 when I lied about my age to go to work for the on a Gandhi dancing job. And I've been affiliated with the dock down here for over 37 years. The Seward dock and the railroad, as they stand today, are in a fairly sad state of mechanical shape and affairs and what they've done. And that some of the various projects that are currently under construction or planned for, in many ways, conflict with each other. These have been brought on by legislative doings or an administration, in some cases, not doing or not completing. The grain terminal remnants sit out there. Four cement rings that sit on the dock and two loops of track that in and around and a fence around it. They're in the way. The equipment on the docks, faces, and the bulwarks are in a sad state of repair. The fender piles, for example, I believe there's 300 of them that need to be replaced or have some work done on them. And these are acquisition cost of $1,000 a piece. And the bull rails are any ordinary safety type of law. If it were not federal government, the safety would be whacked terrible that they would allow such a decree to go aboard. There are several conflicting things. For years, we were allowed to clean the docks and wash them with salt water out of the pumps because it was a good way to control ice and that. A state agency says we can't do that anymore because it pollutes it. So what's it do? You grade it around, and as the rains come like today, it all runs back in the bay anyhow. So you can't do it. Seaways is a facility that started out to be built on the east side of the dock, spaced out approximately 300 feet to the east of the present dock. Due to problems with land acquisition and dredging, this has now been moved, and the dock facility will be moved up next to the primary dock, and the barges will be tied to the present dock. Putting it on the east side, they're going to have a three-tiered ramp that's going to run the trucks in and out of the barge, and they're going to unload it. Seaway's present schedule calls for them to be here on Friday, work approximately 12 hours, and unloading their vans, loading them back, putting them in, and away they go. This, by having a barge laying there on Friday, precludes at the present time any other carrier using our steel, which is one of the